You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Mitch, it was a tight one for a long time there in Detroit versus Minnesota last night in the basketball game, but Detroit again edging the Timberwolves out for a victory. At least it was closer than the last time these two teams met.
Yeah, definitely. It was a fun game. The fourth quarter wasn't so fun for Minnesota fans and for the Wolves themselves, but it was a fun game, and that's really what it's been this year between these two teams. It's kind of been Detroit's kind of had Minnesota's number, and it's kind of been a fun battle between both of them. So, it was a kind of a tough game down the stretch for Minnesota, but it was one of those games that you're locked in till the end. So that's really all you could ask for.
For those of you who have been missing out on one of the best ways to start out your week, Mitch Hansen comes on every week to talk about the weekend and what happened in basketball for the Timberwolves, recap a little bit of how they're doing, and then we hit you later on in the episode with Mitch's love and hate for the Timberwolves over the last week of basketball, and just draws your eye to maybe something that you hadn't seen before, something that you should enjoy about the team, something they need to work on. That'll be coming up later. First of all, let's dive into this matchup. So Detroit comes in, and the Timberwolves actually start out fairly well. They're edging them out in the first couple quarters. They're close, but they're outscoring 24-22 and 29-27 in the first two quarters of basketball, going to the half in the lead. They ended up with 54 points in the paint to 50. It's always good when you're playing Andre Drummond and you're able to grab more points in the paint than the Detroit Pistons are able to, but turnovers, especially late in the game, just some turnovers ended up killing this basketball team and not being able to convert on some possessions. And it got to where you really felt like they could win this game. And then the Timberwolves maybe just played a little out of sync on offense in some of those late possessions. What did you think of the Timberwolves' performance late in the game against Detroit, especially in that fourth quarter?
Yeah, you kind of touched on it. Just the turnovers just killed them. I know Tom Thibodeau was saying that post game that they just couldn't overcome the turnovers. And when you commit 20 turnovers in a game, and a lot of those, well, not a lot of them, but a handful of them come down the stretch, that you're not going to win too many games that way. And the thing in the fourth quarter that kind of stood out to me was the first three quarters. It seemed like the Wolves' ball movement was really well. That kind of led or fed into some of their successes. When they're moving the ball around and they're getting everyone involved, they're a tough team to beat, as a lot of teams are in this league. But in the fourth quarter, it kind of seemed like they, and some of that was because Andrew Wiggins was playing well in the fourth quarter, and he finished with seven of his 24 points in the fourth quarter, and that feeds into it a little bit. But it kind of seemed like they kind of switched more to the isolation, and they got a little too comfortable with that, and it kind of seemed like they got stuck in that mode again in the fourth quarter, and they got away from moving the ball around and getting everyone involved and what makes them such a scary team. So I think it was just kind of a bad combination of everything, and the Pistons were playing well, and they fought their way back into the game, and credit to them. But the Wolves, they were in a position to win it late, and Jimmy had that free throw that he missed late in the game that would have tied it up, but that's how it goes sometimes, and unfortunately it didn't go Minnesota's way.
You brought up two things that I really wanted to dive into. The first one, I brought it up in my my top 10 tidbits of the next NBA week, something I write every Sunday. It comes out Monday. It actually just literally was published before we started recording this episode. One of the things I brought to the attention of the reader was, and that's out on Zone Coverage, by the way, for the listeners, one of the things I noticed in especially the Suns, Mavericks, and against the Pistons, there were a lot of possessions in all three of those games where when the team is down or it's a close game and Teague or Butler really feel like the team needs to score on this possession, like there's a lot of pressure on a specific possession, it seems like they tend to go into a bit of isolation mode when this offense really functions its best off of one or two or three passes before the shot is taken. But and now Butler and Teague are really essential to this team. They're really great players, and I'm not saying that they need to have the ball less or be out on the floor less or anything crazy like that. But there are a couple possessions I've noticed late in games, if it's tight, where they will take the ball and shoot it early in the shot clock when instead of passing it around, because they feel like there's a lot. It seems like they feel a lot of pressure on a possession and like they have to go out and score a bucket. And that's been a problem. You saw late in the Detroit game, that was a little bit of a problem where Butler would take it down the floor and try and get a shot really quickly, when if you just pass it around, play the style of offense that has been working for you all season long, you probably find a bucket. What do you think about the isolation basketball was hurting them late in that game specifically?
I think just, you know, it seems like the first three quarters they have nice flow. Like, you know, they whether it's the pick and roll offense, whether, you know, whatever it may be, it seems like they have nice flow, which leads to them, you know, getting to the paint, you know, getting a high number of assists on their baskets. For instance, in the late in the fourth or second quarter, excuse me, they, you know, they were getting to the paint a lot. They had 13, they had assists on 13 of their 22 baskets. So it's like, you know, early on in the game and early on in the first half, that was working well. And in the second half, it just seemed like, you know, it switched. It, you know, they seemed to look as most specifically in the fourth quarter, it seemed like they just try and find the hot hand and roll with that hot hand instead of, you know, continuing to work with, you know, what's working well up leading up to that point. And, you know, it kind of seemed like they just kind of gave Wiggins the ball or, you know, in other instances, it's been like you mentioned, Jimmy Butler, Jeff Teague. They just kind of give them the ball and get out of the way. And that's not what works well for Minnesota. That's, you know, that's something we saw a lot last year, too, with Wiggins and Towns, is you just kind of give them the ball and let them go, and that didn't lead to a lot of wins. So, you know, I don't agree with that. I mean, obviously, the Wolves know what they're doing, and they know the kind of personnel they have and what they need to do late in games. But it that so far this season, it's an early on in this season, it hasn't really worked well. And I'd like to maybe see them move more towards, you know, what we've seen like last night in the first three quarters, is moving the ball around, making quick decisions. And, you know, that it just seems like, you know, when they do that, they have better flow to the offense, and that leads to little better things in the end.
Well, and to just making a play like getting the ball to Wiggins more when he was, you said he had 7 points of his 24 points in the fourth mm-hmm. quarter. He shot 61% from the field. He didn't hit a three-pointer all game, which isn't great, but he was still shooting well from basically everywhere else. And mm-hmm. when he was getting to the line, he was hitting about 50% of those. He only had four free throw shots, but he was hitting from the free throw line as well. And so maybe giving him a few more shots in the fourth quarter, since he was feeling it, and Jeff Teague at 14% shooting from the field was clearly not feeling it. Just getting it to one of those guys and trying to maybe get Wiggins hot, especially from outside, to open up the floor for Towns, were a couple of things that I would have loved to see them do a little bit more of in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, again, it's really hard to condemn a team for having Jimmy Butler take some of those shots mm-hmm. because he is an all-star caliber player. And so maybe that ends up maybe not being the worst strategy in the world, dying by Jimmy Butler missing a couple shots.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, going back to last night, Wiggins kept them in the game late in the fourth quarter. He was basically the only thing offensively that was working well for Minnesota. So, you know, I don't blame them for going back to the hot hand, like you said, but, you know, I agree with you that, you know, you're in this team, when you have Wiggins, Towns, Butler, sometimes Teague and Gibson, you don't really have a bad option late in the fourth if you're going to choose somebody. I guess personally, I would just like to, you know, this kind of goes back to Jeff Teague and a little bit more onto him, but, you know, I'd like to see them, you know, have more flow in the offense, kind of continue to work with what's going well. But, you know, like we said, going back to last night, Wiggins was playing well in the fourth, and he did keep them in the game. And if they didn't have that, you know, this could have been maybe a 5-6 point deficit. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, Wiggins did play well, and he deserved those shots late in the fourth quarter. But I would like to see more flow, I guess, within the offense, and continuing to, you know, work with what's going well throughout the game. But, you know, it's like I said, they did have a chance to win it at the end. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, they got blown out or anything like that because of what they were doing. They were in this game, and, you know, it just kind of came down to basically one free throw at the end that cost them the game.
Well, and at the end of the day, too, this is a really tough Detroit team to play mm-hmm. with, just because of the on defense, the length they have with Bradley, you have Tobias Harris, you have Andre Drummond, even Reggie Jackson's really good on offense, and he's playing a lot better on defense too. He might turn out having a career season here this year for Detroit. They've got a lot of long guys. Stanley Johnson's a long guy. They make it really hard to pass, and so maybe they felt like if they could get one guy, if Jimmy Butler could get hot and just play isolation basketball and kind of take a big shoulder of the offense on himself in the fourth quarter, that would be better than trying to feed it through and end up turning the ball over late, just because this, it is a team that really gets in the way of passing lanes.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, they are a tough team. They're playing really well, and you know, that's credit to them for battling back. And you know, they outscored the Wolves by 12 in the fourth quarter, so that's not an easy thing to do on the road. But also, one thing that you know I didn't realize was happening, but you know, after last night's game, I looked more in depth the first two matchups. Tobias Harris has been killing the Wolves. You know, the first game in Detroit, he went off for 34 points in last night. I mean, he didn't go off last night, but he had a solid game. He had 18 and 9. So I mean, those two games against Minnesota, he's been outside of Andre Drummond. He's been really tough for Minnesota to handle. And you know, I guess when they acquired him a couple years ago, that's what they needed, and that's what Detroit's been looking for out of him. And you know, He's been playing well, specifically against Minnesota, but he's been playing well this year, and he's having a career year. So they are a tough team, and you know they're not an easy win by any means. But you know, they seem to have Minnesota's number so far this year.
No, yeah, you're right. I saw you tweet that out that this morning, I believe it was, that you noted that Tobias Harris had a good game, and it is important to note, I think, too. Didn't he have like two to four points headed into halftime? So the majority of his scoring came late, and I remember him shooting, I believe it was 1 for 10 in the first half, and so he just got hot in the second half of that game, and I think that was a big part of that. And Avery Bradley was really good in the first half, and he was good just enough to keep them hanging around. And then with Tobias Harris's push and the turnovers that happened in that second half, that was enough to be the difference late. I did want to get to the Hornets matchup. The Hornets are playing the Timberwolves tonight, the second time that the Timberwolves will play the Hornets this season already. But first, I really want to talk about the free throw shot. I don't know if you've been looking at videos and stuff, but I've been watching videos all over Twitter. I rewatched that sequence of events going back on League Pass, and it was either Stanley Johnson or Reggie Jackson who said something, did something to distract Butler. The facial expression that Butler makes perfectly describes every time I've ever been disappointed in my life. And I know that's not a big consolation for the Timberwolves fans, but that face was perfect in so many situations for the rest of my life. And I just want to say, Jimmy Butler, thank you, because I'm going to be using that in text a lot for the rest of my life.
Yeah, though that was a weird ending. You know, it kind of seemed like I don't know if a lot of players would necessarily, you know, do what Jimmy. I mean, you know, Jimmy's reaction was priceless when it was. I think it was Reggie Jackson that came up. But
what a great expression!
Right. And that's, you know, that's the kind of the reaction and the memes we've seen from Jimmy the last couple of years. That's definitely going to be thrown in there with all of those. But you know, it was just a weird ending, and I don't know if necessarily the, you know, him coming up there and kind of yelling behind Jimmy, I don't know if that necessarily had that big of an impact on his free throw. He just flat out missed the free throw, I think. But, you know, it was kind of a weird ending, and it was kind of a thing while you're watching, you're like, did he really just do that? Is this happening right now? I don't really know what's going on. So it was weird. But, you know, I think probably 8 out of 10 times Jimmy's going to make that shot regardless. So it was definitely an interesting ending, that's for sure.
Well, and I would love to hear what he said, because when you're lined up for free throws, the majority of the time when the NBA players are doing that, they're talking to each other. They're not saying what a great game each player is having on the other team. Mm-hmm. They're talking to each other and going back and forth a little bit. So it would be really interesting to see or hear what Jackson said to Jimmy Butler to actually garner a response from him, and what was different than maybe other things that Jimmy Butler has heard when he's taking a free throw shot, because that's definitely not the first time that somebody has been talking some smack when he's trying to shoot a free throw.
Right, and I'm actually just watching the replay right now, and it almost looks like Reggie Jackson just came up and like right before, you know, the referee was going to give Jimmy the ball, it kind of looked like he went up there and yelled something to his teammates to make sure that, I don't know, something was figured out. And that it didn't really look like he yelled anything. Maybe he did. I can't really tell all that well, because I'm horrible at lip reading or seeing what, you know, what people are saying. But, you know,
not a professional lip reader.
Right. Maybe I need to work on that a little bit better than what I'm at right now. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it did make a difference. I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't know. I personally don't think it made that big of a difference in Jimmy making the free throw or missing it. But LeBron even came out today and said that he won a playoff series doing that before and going up and yelling behind a free throw shooter. So maybe it does have an impact. I mean, you wouldn't think that with crowd noise and how loud fans are that would really impact the player all that much or a shooter all that much. But you never know. Maybe the littlest things matter.
And from the LeBron, I did see the LeBron thing as well, and it almost seemed like LeBron was, when he was talking about the free throw shooting, it almost felt like he was actually referring to when he got Draymond kicked out of the Warriors series. a little bit, just as far as affecting a playoff series with bringing to attention to maybe words and comments and such, and the way a player's acted. But yeah, that was interesting as well, an interesting factor that played into it. But it was a strange series of events, and it was unfortunate, especially when they were right there. And then Butler almost came back and hit the last second buzzer beater like Wiggins did, that just rimmed out.
Yeah, that shot was very close to going in. And, you know, it would have been kind of interesting to see, you know, if Jimmy would have made that free throw, kind of how that would have all played out afterwards. There's a lot of time still left on the clock for Detroit to make, you know, make a last second or late game push. So, I mean, there was a lot that happened in that last minute. But yeah, like you said, that would have been absolutely nuts if, you know, if Jimmy would have hit that shot just like Wiggins did earlier in the season and have two of those within, you know, 16 games. That'd be pretty crazy. But that was very close to going down, and I would have liked to see the reaction from the fans after that. If he would have actually hit that shot.
Oh, that place would have been, that place would have gone nuts.
Louder than Cherryberry.
That too. That's a bonus as well. So just quickly before we get to the Hornets matchup, I did want to touch on the Minnesota Timberwolves Dallas Mavericks clash, just because there wasn't a podcast over the weekend. Did you have anything that really stood out to you from this matchup, or was it just the Timberwolves cleaning up after a little bit of a sloppy first half?
I think that's mainly what it was. You know, they it almost kind of seemed like they didn't have the amount of energy they're used to coming into the game. I don't know if that was because maybe they just, I mean, no team shows up and expects, you know, just expects to win, but it, you know, it kind of seemed like that to an extent.
Also coming off of a tough Spurs matchup.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it was Dallas, and, you know, Dallas obviously is a bottom team in the West, but, you know, it almost seemed like just in the second half, and maybe Tibbs needs to yell at his guys and like he did at halftime more often this year. But it kind of seemed like, I don't know if it was Tibbs, I don't know if it was something else, but they just kind of woke up, and they played like we're accustomed to seeing them. So I don't know necessarily what it was. I know that they, you know, looking at the stat sheet, you know, they did move the ball around a little bit more. They obviously shot the ball a lot better, and you know, they definitely, it was kind of a Warriors-esque second half that they went off on. So it was fun to watch, and I mean, that's definitely a point that you can go back to, you know, throughout the season and point to and say, you know, this is the offense that we're capable of, or this is, you know, this is the way we're capable of playing. And you know, I don't think there's any reason why the Wolves can't do that. I don't know if they're ever gonna, you know, outscore Dallas or another team in the league like they did Dallas that night, but you know, it seemed like the second half they just kind of woke up a little bit, and they realized that, hey, we can definitely beat these guys. They're not that great. So it's, you know, it was a fun game to watch. That's for sure.
And just that, I know, again, it's Dallas, but the fact that they were able to hold them to 32 points in the entire second half was a pretty good showing from their defense, just to buckle down and take back that game. Another thing I noticed from that is just that they were able to win it a little bit differently just from the other games that they've won, they were shooting a ton from the perimeter. They ended up shooting 43% from downtown, took 33s in that game. So just to see a flash of that team and a version of that team where they're down and they really need a lot of buckets and they need some deep shots, and so they're going to shoot well from outside, I thought that was pretty good, even though, again, it's a Dallas team. You're supposed to beat Dallas. But I thought it was a – when they were playing and they came out flat in the first half, I thought it was a really encouraging second half to just prove that they're a team that can win these games they're supposed to win, as opposed to last year when these games were always up in the air.
Right. And, you know, it's a good thing to have happen. I know it's not very early in the season, but it's still, you know, relatively early. It's still in the first, you know, quarter of the season. You know, it, just to have something like this happen where you have to battle back in the second half, even if it is against a team like Dallas or whoever it may be, you know, that's nothing but, you know, a good thing. And to have, you know, the way, like you mentioned, the way they did it, they were shooting the ball well, they were playing good defense, they were, you know, the ball movement was, you know, it was really well. They finished with 27 assists in the game. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, the offense was clicking on all cylinders. And that's very encouraging. That's, you know, that's a good confidence boost for a team that, you know, maybe, you know, is continuing to try and gel and figure things out. So that it was a good all-around win. I mean, there was a lot of factor, a lot of different ways you can look at this game and come back to it being a good win, you know, just with the factors I just mentioned. But, you know, it was definitely a good win. And, you know, it kind of, they had a little bit of a road bump, you know, last night against Detroit. But, you know, I think they're still playing decent for trying to figure things out early on in the season.
All right. And now we're going to move on to your love hate in a little bit here. But first, let's preview this Hornets game. So, early on, they won pretty handily against the Hornets when they played them, a week and a half ago about. And so this is another game. There's enough talent on this roster, on the Hornets roster, to make me stay away from the phrase a game they should definitely win, like the Dallas Mavericks or the Phoenix Suns. But this game is one where they definitely have more talent on their roster than their opponents. And so as long as you can have another good game where you're holding in check a player like Kemba Walker, I think that you have a really good chance of winning. And outside of that, what's kind of the game plan you want to see from the Wolves going into this game against Charlotte?
You know, I would kind of like to see them force Charlotte to go inside. I mean, they have, you know, like Dwight Howard, and they, you know, they have some talented bigs, but I'd like to, you know, they, when you have players like Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lamb, and, you know, you got Malik Monk that, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist that can, you know, kind of, you know, hurt you from the outside, it'd be nice to kind of force them inside and you know, with having Kat and Taj inside and Gorgie, you know, make them beat you inside, because Minnesota is talented inside. And, you know, if this ends up being a shooting, you know, outside shooting contest, basically a 3-point contest, I think, you know, it'll go to the, you know, Charlotte's going to come away with the win. But, you know, I'd like to see them force it inside and make Charlotte beat you inside rather than, you know, having them beat you on the outside, because they are a scary team from the outside.
Getting ready for this game, it was interesting. In three seasons of Teague's career, he's averaged over 50%, nearly 60% shooting from the 3-point line in all the games in three seasons that he played against Charlotte. So when you're looking at Teague and the kind of down game he had against Detroit, only scoring 3 points, he had 9 assists, but he only had 3 points. And this, I was looking at this as kind of a way for him to, he's very confident, he's really good against the Hornets throughout his entire career. I felt like this was a game where he could really use it to propel him throughout the rest of this week and really find that hot hand from downtown again and start hitting some shots from downtown and get his stride and rhythm back from deep. And this is a game where he could really bounce back in a big way after only putting up 3 points at home against Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they are going to need a big game from Jeff Teague, you know, offensively and defensively, you know, keeping Kemba Walker in check, like you mentioned, but also, you know, he needs to, you know, improve offensively as well. You know, and I think that's going to be a huge factor in the game. And, you know, he held Kemba to 9 points, 9 assists last game. If you can do that again, the Wolves are going to win the game. But, you know, outside of really outside of Kemba Walker, who's, you know, he's averaging 23.5 points, Jeremy Lin's averaging 16. Outside of those two players, you know, Charlotte doesn't really have that many threats. You know, I mean, they, you know, next is Dwight Howard with just under 14 points a game. So, you know, I think that they, the main thing will be Kemba Walker, and Jeff Teague needs to have a big game in the matchup with him, both offensively and, like you mentioned, or both defensively and, like you mentioned, offensively. And if, you know, if he has a great game and they can keep Kemba in check, you know, it should be a good win for the Wolves.
The one thing I would caution Wolves fans about is just that this is a pretty, I don't think you see a ton in the NBA, but this is one of the NBA teams where they are really different home in a way. I think you saw the perfect example of this was the loss they had over the weekend to the Chicago Bulls, and then coming home and putting up a really great performance against a really good LA Clippers team. They almost beat the Cleveland Cavaliers at home. They had a loss to the Kyrie-less Boston Celtics on the road. I think this is just a team where they really do a lot better in front of that home crowd, and on their home court they perform at a different pace and are a little more efficient on offense and play a little more crisp version of basketball. I would also look out for guys like Malik Monk. I think Malik Monk is definitely one of those guys who thrives in a home court environment where he hits a three and he gets the crowd going, and he makes a really good defensive play, and then he's back and he's feeling it from downtown and he's feeling his shot, and the home crowd is getting jazzed up behind him. I think they just have a few players like that on the roster where I think Kemba is out of that range where he's not going to be affected by home or away, but I think they have some young guys who are affected by being at home and being in front of a home crowd. So I think this is going to be a different team than the one that the Wolves played when they were at home.
Right. I definitely agree with that. And, you know, even look at the Wolves with their, you know, home and away, you know, watching the game last night, you know, the Fox Sports North crew, they flashed up a graphic on Karl Anthony Towns and the fact that, you know, he's averaging like 6 points less on the road. You know, just little things like that, that, you know, the Wolves are kind of similar in that regard, just like Charlotte, like you mentioned. But, you know, Charlotte comes into the game losing six of their last seven. Almost all of those have been on the road. And, you know, obviously they're in the middle of a three-game homestand right now. And, you know, I've always said this, it's never, you know, obviously it's never easy to win on the road in the NBA, and especially in an environment like Charlotte, who's in the midst of a three-game road trip coming off a win on Saturday. So, yeah, it'll definitely be tough. And, you know, I think the Wolves definitely have their work cut out for them. But I think that it's definitely a winnable game, like we talked about earlier, but it should be a good game. Looking forward to it.
So looking at this game, making a little bit of prediction, Wolves, what are one or two things that you want to see them do really well that would give them the opportunity for a victory here?
I think they need to shoot much better from the three. They need to shoot the ball better than what they did against Detroit. And, you know, I would like to see them kind of control Charlotte's guards, kind of like I mentioned before. You know, if you can keep Kemba Walker in check as well as Jeremy Lamb, you know, I think that you're forcing guys like Malik Monk, like you had mentioned before, you're forcing guys like them to make plays. And, you know, as a guy that is young and is a rookie in the league, that's, you know, that could be a big challenge for him against a team like Minnesota. So I think that, you know, they need to, yeah, you know, they need to keep Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lamb in check. And, you know, they need to shoot the ball better, because especially if Charlotte is shooting the ball like they're capable from three, you know, Minnesota needs to match that. And if they shoot like they did against Detroit, that's, you know, that's definitely not a good sign. And I think they need to shoot more like they did in Detroit. Obviously, you don't really expect them to, you know, drop, shoot 30 times from three, because that's kind of uncharacteristic of the Wolves. But, you know, if they can, you know, shoot anything close to what they did against Dallas, excuse me, over the weekend, then, you know, I think that'll be good in this one.
Alrighty, and I think too, Wiggins staying hot will be key for them as well. Right. I mentioned earlier, 61% he shot against Detroit. If he can just keep finding his rhythm against them, that'll be another key for the Wolves going into it, as well as everything you mentioned, that'll lead to a solid victory on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And Wiggins has been playing great lately, I think. You know, especially late in the games, he's done, you know, we saw that first kind of last year with him kind of taking over as the game progresses. And, you know, I think that, you know, he has been playing well as of late. It's been a very encouraging thing to, you know, see that. And then you pair that with Jimmy Butler and you have Karl Anthony Towns, and, you know, it's definitely a scary thing. And, you know, the Wolves have a lot of weapons, and, you know, that's what makes them a tough team to beat. And I think that's one thing that Charlotte doesn't necessarily have, and they're going to have to try and slow down, is, you know, having multiple weapons on a team and having, you know, the weapons such as Minnesota. It's, you know, they're a tough team to stop, and it's going to be a big challenge for the Hornets.
Alrighty, the moment everybody's been waiting for. Mitch's love or hate. What do you love? What do you hate? Come on, Mitch. Tell the people what they want to hear. This is the segment they've been looking forward to all weekend long. This is the thing that'll get them through their Monday. Love and hate. Mitch's love and hate. What do you got for us this week?
Well, for love, I kind of spoiled it just a couple seconds ago. I love to, you know, continuing to see what Wiggins has been doing, especially late in games. You know, the way that, you know, he kind of takes over games, and the way that he's been playing in the last, you know, for most of the season, but specifically last few games has been definitely encouraging. And, you know, I'd expect nothing but, you know, the same the rest of the year. And, you know, having him as a fourth quarter option, as well as, like I said earlier, Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns, that's very, you know, that's potent, and that's kind of scary. And I think that those guys will improve as the season goes on and in those late game situations, and that'll be scary as the season goes on.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're preaching to the choir here. I was the one who was fully on board when they were trying to sign Wiggins to the max over the summer, and eventually got him to sign the 5-year, $148 million deal. I just really feel like he's a guy who can get to his ceiling, and even if he doesn't quite reach his ceiling, you're still paying for a guy who's averaging about 25 points a night and is a solid defender.
Right, yeah, and I think that he's showing us this year already that he's, you know, he deserves that max. He did last year too, but, you know, he continues. Maybe his stats aren't backing up as, you know, or aren't as impressive as what they were last year. But when you add someone like, you know, you have Jeff Teague, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and you add the cast that they've added this year, you know, his numbers aren't going to be as high as they were. You know, that's just not going to happen. And if they are, that's maybe not a good sign for the Wolves, because that means they're maybe relying too heavy on him, and no one else is, you know, kind of helping him carry the load. But, you know, he's showed us this year already that, you know, he's becoming, you know, someone that deserves that max deal. And obviously he's going to be getting that deal. He signed it already. It's all done with. But, you know, he's starting to show us why he's considered a max deal by a lot of people around the league. And hopefully he can continue to only grow from here.
Yeah, and we mentioned the scoring last game he had, but he had a really solid night for the defensive side as well, and he's averaging 1.4 steals per game this season. That's a career best so far through, and I know we're only about 16 games in, but that's still a career high for steals for him as far as averages. So his defense is definitely coming along, and I really like Wiggins, like to see him develop and think he is an all-star caliber player. All right, give us your hate. What do you hate?
All right, the hate, I hate to say it, but Shabazz Muhammad, he is just killing me. You know, I know his minutes are down this year, so, you know, give him, I know he's said in years past that, you know, he's somebody that works better in a high volume of minutes, which applies to a lot of players, but, you know, he's down a couple minutes this year, but his numbers are not good. You know, he's averaging career worst since his rookie year, basically. You know, and he in his rookie year, he played only seven and a half minutes. But he's, you know, right now he's almost to 13 minutes a game, and he's averaging worse than that year. So, I mean, you know, his minutes are down. His shooting has been basically a flip-flop of what it was last year. He's, you know, he's shooting 39% from the field, which is a career worst, and he's shooting 7.7% from three, which is a career worst, or is worse than the NBA this season. So, you know, I'd like to see him obviously do a lot better than what he has. But you know, that's the thing. I'm definitely not high on that this week. So that would be my hate this week.
I think the two commonalities between all of the zone coverage Wolves staff that I have come on the podcast throughout the week. The first is that they're all phenomenal writers for zone coverage and elsewhere. The second is that they all have problems with Shabazz Muhammad and the way he plays offense this season. And for good reason. He is shooting really poorly. He isn't, and the problem with Shabazz is that when he gets into a shooting funk, he doesn't really offer too much else. He's averaging 0.4 assists per game. So he's not looking to get the ball to somebody else. And now, granted, there's been some rough games from the bench this season. Last night was a rough game for the bench. But there's still guys who are knocking down shots to the point where he should be averaging more than 0.4 assists per game.
Right. I agree. And, you know, he's somebody that, you know, so throughout his career, I mean, he's in year five now, he hasn't really established anything else than an offensive game. I mean, he hasn't been able to, you know, pass the ball. Even rebounding, he's not that great for, you know, the position that he plays. So like you said, when he is struggling shooting the ball, he's just basically an extra body out there. He's not really doing a whole lot or offering a whole lot to the team. And when you have, you know, the likes of, especially, you know, adding Jamal Crawford this year, Jamal Charles is not playing basketball anytime soon. But when you add Jamal Crawford like they did this year, and then you have Belly playing as well as he is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you don't necessarily need Boz to shoot, you know, to go off every night or, you know, to carry the load offensively. And that, you know, that's all he does. So, I mean, what else? He's got to establish more, you know, expand his game, or he's got to, you know, become more a part of the offense rather than, you know, just scoring. Scoring's important. I mean, don't get me wrong. That's a great key thing to have. But when the offense is rolling and, you know, the shooting's coming from other players, you know, you need Boz to, you know, expand his game a little bit. And I'd like to see him do that as the year progresses.
Absolutely. Hopefully the offense starts to grow for him, because the defense definitely looks like it's not coming along, at least at this point. Any stories you want to promote before we head out here, Mitch? Anything coming out in the near future?
I'll have a piece this week. I don't want to say too much because I want to make it a surprise. I want to make sure everyone's clicking on the story and checking it out, as well as everything else on zone coverage. But I'm going to be doing the recap tonight, recap after the game, the Hornets game, so be on the lookout for that. But other than that, I'll have something later on this week to share with everybody.
Awesome. So look out. That was a good tease from Mitch. Look out for that that piece. I'm excited myself now to go out and look for it. But also check out the recap tonight, just to make sure that you get all the information you possibly can after the Hornets versus Timberwolves game. Make sure to watch that tonight. Go check out all the other great sports information on zonecoverage.com. Mitch, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.